Hello, everybody, and welcome to another comedian's interview for my blog, A Rich Comic Life. The blog describes over 45 years of watching over 700 comedians and counting, and I'm so delighted to welcome one of my favourite funny comedians, Mr. Boothby Graffo! Yes! Hello! How are you?
Yeah, great, thank you.
Good to see you.
Yeah, you too.
I'm so pleased you've decided to do this, because you are one of my favorite comedians. I've seen you so many times over the years. The first time I saw you was 2005 at the Edinburgh Fringe.
Oh my God.
Yeah. and it's just wonderful. So we're going to go right back to the start of your comedy career.
And are we going to do that?
And I'd like you to tell me what inspired you to become a comedian and musician.
That's a very interesting question. I would have to say laziness.
Right.
Laziness, I think. Yeah.
So it was just something to do.
It just seemed something that you could do that didn't really take a lot of effort.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've always been very lazy.
That's brilliant.
I looked at it back then because people went to work at, you know, 7 a.m. and worked from 8:30 till 4:30, 5 o'clock, 5:30, and then they travelled home, and they did that 40-odd hours a week. And I used to go and do 45 minutes.
That seems fantastic.
Yeah. When you look back, you realise eventually that, of course, you're driving for 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
You're hanging around.
That's tedious.
Yeah, you're driving back and all the rest of it. But at the time when I was younger, the idea of just working for, say, half an hour, 45 minutes, an hour was
fantastic. I do 40 hour weeks at the school where I work. I'm a receptionist at a secondary school, and long hours. So comedy is my release. That's why I go and see a load of comedy. Yeah.
You've probably seen most of the young comic. You should be able to pick out from the pupils.
Yeah, well.
You're going to be watching in 10 years' time.
I make recommendations to them. I really do. Can you tell me how and where was your first gig?
It was in a primary school.
Right.
In Yorkshire.
Right.
And it wasn't so much a stage appearance, but my job was the play was Noah.
Right.
And we were all about six. I didn't get a part in it.
Right.
I wasn't a named character, but my job was when they send the raven out and the raven doesn't come back.
Oh yeah.
And then he sends the dove out when the water's falling. He sends the dove out, and the dove comes back with a leaf in its mouth. The what's the leaf? I can't even remember. Olive. Is it olive?
Olive. Yeah.
Well, my job was like the woodworker had made it, and it was like a balsa wood dove.
Right.
And my job was to pop up behind this. There, the boat, and throw it when he sends it, and I throw it, and it would float over the audience. and then a little bit later, somebody would throw it from the back of the room.
Wow!
With an olive branch in its mouth.
Wow! And that was your first stage appearance.
That was my first. Wait, I wasn't supposed to be, because I popped up in the wrong place and was visible, which I wasn't supposed to be. I was supposed to be behind a flat, and I came up in the wrong place. And that got a laugh. And then I threw the dove, but I didn't throw it very well. And rather than soar over the audience majestically, it just fell on its nose about 6 inches in front of me. And I had to pick it up. I pick it up, throw it again.
Yeah.
And it went the other way, the wrong way. And yeah, big laugh. Those were my first laughs, man. I was hooked.
And that was it. Once you get the laughs, it is like a drug, isn't it? It's extraordinary.
Yeah, it kept me going all the way through detention.
Yeah. What was your first paid comedy gig? Did you go through the 5 minutes in a pub and then build up that way, or were you thrown in at the deep end?
Oh no! First paid one was I did one of those they used to call them the showcases.
Right.
This wasn't in London, this was in Nottingham. They did showcases and all the agents would go. And right. you, that would be like the 5 minute open spot, I suppose. Yeah. You do 5 to 10 minutes and you'd be on with about 30 or 40 other acts.
Yeah.
And then the agents for the various areas were there. And I think it was the Roe Birch Sports and Social Club.
Wow.
Not far from Stoke, I think.
I went to college there.
Did you?
I went to college, Staffordshire University.
Oh yeah,
1986.
Oh yeah, this was just before that, I think.
Yeah.
Wonderful place.
Great 2 years I had.
Yeah. It's a nice place, isn't it? It's nice country and everything. It's one of those. It's black country, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah. Really good.
We're underrated on the countryside side of things. It's very pretty.
Yeah, it is. To date, what has been your best and worst comedy gig? Have you got one?
Yeah, the Roe Birch Sports and Social Club.
Was it that good?
Oh, no, it was awful. It was really awful.
How many was in the crowd?
I don't remember that as such. A lot, I think. But not to see me, obviously. They were just there on a night out. It was like a... I was on after the singer.
Yeah.
I was in the first half. I was on after the singer, and then in the second half, I was on after the magic act.
Right.
And as the evening went, I was on after the singer, and I was paid off before the second half.
The days of variety, my friend.
Yeah. They gave me half my money and told me to go.
To go. Oh, mate. That says something
about your act, doesn't it? When people tell you that they would rather have nothing than you, and that's what they said.
That's not fair for you because it's such a good act.
We'd rather have a magic act followed by half an hour of nothing because we feel that would be more entertaining.
That's not true.
I will tell you the one though. I do tell this story from time to time. Yeah. This is a true story. This is in the Daybrook Constitutional Club in Derby.
Right.
And I was doing very badly, very badly. And there was quite a few in, and it was not going well. And I used to have a big suitcase full of props then, and I'd take the stuff out and the props would go everywhere, and I ended up, you know, anyway, it was just very poor, my act then. and anyway, it was going so badly, eventually this bloke just got up on stage. He was like probably, you know, only a couple of years older than me. I was about 22 or something, 23. And he took the microphone off me and he said, I think this comedian is dog poo. I know. And what most upset me, I still remember it, what most upset me was the fact that he euphemized it to poo rather than shit. that he had respect for the people in the audience who he didn't want to offend.
Yeah.
But somehow using the word poo instead of shit was even more offensive. So, anyway, he got a massive round of applause, which, to be fair, was the first and only one of when I was. And what I did was, I was rather miffed, so I just said, okay then, okay. And I got on my prop. I walked around with my case. I opened my case, big leather, old big leather traveling case, no suitcase. And I walked around the stage picking up all the props and throwing them in the case. And it took, you know, a bit of time. And then I took my jacket off, put that in, and my shirt, and I put that in, and my shoes and my socks, and I put them in. And I took my trousers off and I put them in. And I'm just standing there in my pants. And I shut the case and picked it up. And I turned around and I said, "Ladies and gentlemen, with all due respect, you can fuck off." Now it gets better. And I turned, like, very pompously, turned my back on him and walked to the back of the stage where there was a double fire exit door.
Right.
And I kicked that open, walked through, and with, you know, a finger to say goodbye, I slammed the fire door shut behind me, so I was outside. And I had my car keys. I wasn't stupid. I knew where my car keys were. I'd left nothing in the dressing room. And I was ready to just get in my car and go. I wasn't even waiting for the money. And anyway, when the fire door slammed shut, I turned round and I was in the bottling area of the club.
Right.
Where they keep all the empty barrels and the bottles.
Yeah.
And it was caged off. It was a cage. And I couldn't get out. It was locked. I couldn't get out. It was all like chicken wired up. There was no way out. So after I tried to bite through the chicken wire.
That's
I had an I tried ripping it off, climbing it, nothing, couldn't shift it. They protect the in Derby, they protect their bottles. I had to go back to the fire door and knock on the fire door and get them to let me back in.
So. Oh, mate.
Yeah.
When you first started that story, it reminded me of the classic Les Dawson story when he was first starting out and he was playing some tin pot club somewhere. And some bloke came up to him after the show and he went, you mind if I give you a bit of constructive criticism? He says, "No, not at all." He says, "I think you're crap."
Yeah, do you remember Ned Sherrin?
Yeah.
Ned Sherrin used to tell a lovely story about a genuine letter about points of view. So right. not what was it called? Sorry, Weekending. No,
Weekending,
no, what was it called?
Radio 4, no, yeah.
No, what was his show called? What was his show he used to do every Saturday in the morning?
Oh.
Not Points of View.
No, that was the 70s. I can't remember.
Talking Point or something. I can't remember what it was called. I'm so embarrassed. In fact, no, hang on. I'm going to Google it. We're on Google, aren't we?
Yeah.
Ned Sherrin.
Saturday morning.
Yeah. Show Radio 4. It was on every week. Still on now. What's his name presents it?
Clive Anderson. Loose Ends.
Loose Ends.
Loose Ends. Clive Anderson. Yeah.
That was it. Ned said he got this letter and it said, "Dear Ned Sherrin, I've listened to your show Loose Ends for 5 years now and it's crap."
How do you respond to that?
He was a lovely bloke, Ned Sherrin.
I never saw him live. I know he produced a lot of great comedy shows and set up.
Oh yeah, up the Coliseum. What was it called?
Frankie Howard and David Frost and all that crowd. Yeah.
He was a major producer, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And that was the week it was.
That was, of course.
He was a major player, old Ned.
Yeah.
We got rid of him in the end, but he was a major player.
He was. You write and perform brilliant comic songs.
These are good questions.
Yeah. No, you do.
That's one of the statements.
I can remember when I first saw you at the Edinburgh Festival in the stand. And you performed your song "Baseball Playing Spiders," and you had each of the crowd singing a different bit. And I thought, this is extraordinary. and to I get bet, the crowd I bet like you did.
Play school.
No. what I wanted to ask you was, where does your songwriting skills come from? Where do your ideas come from?
That's a very good question. It's not something I've given any thought to. I don't write many songs.
Right.
I do write. If I get one that I like, I'll play it for years, decades. As you well know, I'm still singing that one. that one was written in New Zealand in a hotel in Wellington.
Right.
When it was about 10:30 in the morning. And it was raining, and there was a cat in the room.
Yeah.
And this is ridiculous. New Zealand's a fantastic place. I can't go back. It was a fantastic place. But there was this hotel room they'd given me. It was lovely. But there was a cat in my hotel room, which I didn't mind. I like cats, so I didn't say anything. And this cat was just in my hotel room. It was a big, kind of tortoise-shelly cat, and this is serious. This is true. This is something else that happened. I was sitting with a guitar fiddling around, and I was watching baseball on the telly. They had US telly on.
Yeah.
I was watching the baseball, and there was it was 10:30. There was nowhere to go. It was pouring down with rain, and I was just fiddling around, and I was looking at the cat, and the cat was just sitting there watching the baseball with me, sitting on the floor. And this spider, they have some quite big spiders. They do have some quite big spiders over there. And this spider came walking along. And it was a fair old sized thing. It didn't look dangerous, but you never know, do you? But anyway, it walked past the cat, and the cat watched it walking past it. And as it got it got as far as it could to the left of the cat, and the cat just put its paw out like that. And the spider turned around and walked back the other way, complete 180'd, and the spider got that far off to the right, and the cat put its other paw out and stopped it. And the spider, just rather than go the other way, the spider just turned around again and started off the same way. The cat just kept stopping it like that, and it kept turning around, and it did it about 3 or 4 times. It was fascinating to watch. And then the spider got to the middle between the two paws of the cat, and it stopped dead in the middle and didn't move for the longest time, and the cat ate it. And I don't know what the moral of that story is. Keep going. Don't stop.
That's what I love about your lyrics. The songs are the music is fantastic, but the lyrics, you have to sit and listen, and it's so clever. You're writing. I'm thinking particularly of Spelling Bee or Hartley Pool or Pull Back and Reveal. The songs are so. Hang on a minute. This is he's using a word that he's doing A B C D E F G for Spelling Bee, and it's fantastic how you link it all together. It really is.
Well, you're very kind. You're very kind. People are saying I should be rewriting that for the current age, but I think that.
Well, you might as well.
I'm very lazy. I'm not going to be doing.
What I do want to say as well is, and I genuinely mean this, you know I have all your CDs. When I live in London, I live and work in London, but my home city is Carlisle. And whenever I get on a train, genuinely, I always look through my CD collection, and it always goes back to your songs. And I listen to your songs, and they just cheer me up no end. And I can't thank you enough for that. Really, I've never had chance to say that to you, but believe me, I do go back and I'm singing along to them, and they just cheer me up no end. So thank you very much for all that you do.
Thank you, Richard.
What do you think makes a good comedian?
timing
and delivery, I think.
delivery, yeah. It's funny, isn't it, have you ever seen a guy called Will Durst?
Oh, I've heard of him, he's brilliant.
He's a good comic. Confidence is a massive tool.
Do you get nerves when you go before you go on stage? You get nervous?
Oh god, all the time. It never stopped.
Yeah.
Never stopped.
Does that help at all, or how?
No, I hate it.
No. Yeah.
Oh, it's horrible. Yeah. But it's not. It only lasts 40 minutes, half an hour.
Yeah.
10 minutes mostly with my act. Only lasts 10 minutes.
Yeah. Stop putting yourself down. I always look forward to seeing you.
Well, whose is it? I mean, I think it was Arnold Brown. I nicked the joke. Arnold Brown was that. I was going to do some self-depreciating humour, but
I was at his 80th at the Comedy Store. It was fantastic, and he did 20 minutes at the end, and you forget how good a comedian he is.
But this is it, you see. Yeah. Confidence, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's 99% confidence.
Yeah.
And then you might say it's 1% act, but I think I've seen people. Well. Yeah, it is an act, isn't it? I mean, I watched Terry Alderton do 20 minutes one time, and he didn't speak.
No.
He was introduced as a stand-up. He came out and he made silence and noise for 20 minutes, and he did not speak. He did not say a coherent word.
He's an incredible visual comic.
Took the roof off, yeah. He's making noises, and then sometimes he wasn't making any noises at all. But
yeah. I once saw you at the fire station at Windsor.
Oh, I remember it well.
It was your scratch tour, and I'd made a point of going. I'd never been to Windsor before, and I went to Windsor on my own, and went into the fire station and sat on the left hand side of the stage at the front on my own.
Great seating.
Yeah. And you walked out and you looked at me and you said, "Hello, don't tell me your name. Is it Andrew?" And I went, "No." "Is it Brian?" "No." Is it Carl? "No." And then you did another part of your act, and then you came back to me, and the gag was brilliant. It was Dave, "No." "Edward, no." And it was ABCDE.
Yeah,
and every time I said no, there was a cheer. And when it got to Richard, the place went ballistic. And I've never forgotten that. It's such an easy comic tool that you got there. It's great. It's so good. And the way that you do it is just magical. I don't know if you do that all the time. But.
Still do it.
It works.
I got told off by Derek Acora. I did, and it was a tribute. It was actually I considered it a tribute to him, but before he went.
Yeah.
Before, you know, sad that he went.
Yeah.
But yeah, he didn't like it. He didn't like it.
Oh, cool. No, I loved it. Absolutely loved it. We will move on, my friend.
Move on.
How do you cope, if at all, with any difficult audiences?
Tears, pleading. Begging, that sort of thing.
Do you have any remarks to them? Do you speak back to them, or?
I used to. In the old days, if it was hard work.
Yeah.
Because as well, you know, things like festivals and comedy gigs as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, circuit gigs, especially London.
Yeah.
When I first started, it was workingmen's clubs, so you were the only comic on.
Yeah.
So if the comedy wasn't going down well, there was only one person to blame. But on the 20 minutes things in London, if it was hard work for everybody, and then you got to go on to the hard work, it was always you'd be sitting watching people trying to work out what the best approach would be to deal with. Yeah, it was a desire to do well. But the older I got, the less I was bothered by that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I did do a gig not so long ago, a charity gig, and they just weren't listening to anybody.
Wow.
Yeah, they just weren't. And you know, it was for a good cause, and they'd already raised the money, so it was a result, really. You know, they'd already got the money. And so I went out there, and I said a few things, but it wasn't even that people were shouting or saying get off. It was actually they were actually not listening. They were all just talking to each other. Oh. And in the old days, I would have fought for their attention. Yeah. But as it was, I just I put the loop on the guitar and just started playing. I played for about 10 minutes, just nonsense, and no one was listening. And at the end of that, I legged it, and then the compere came up and said, "You only did 10 minutes." And I said, "Yeah, I know." And he said, well, what about the other 5, 10 minutes? You're supposed to do 20. And I said, "Well, take it off me half of it, and take it off me fee."
Oh man!
And he said, "It's a charity. You're not getting paid." I said, "There you go." There you go, mate.
I've seen.
It used to bother me. It doesn't bother me anymore.
No. I've seen you many times at Headliners in Chiswick, and awesome. I always remember Ricky Grover. Is a regular there, and there was a real awful member of the audience. He was really nasty, and he stopped his act halfway through, threw him out. Literally got down off stage, threw him out, and when he came back on to the Rocky theme tune because he was an ex-boxer.
It
just lifted the room. It was and so, you know, we're not there as member of the audience. We're not there to hear them. We're here to hear the act.
That's what you've got. Yeah, I suppose that's what you've just got to keep remember. Well, you see, the thing about Ricky is whoever that was, that bloke, obviously didn't know who Ricky was.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he would never have done that in the first place.
Yeah.
But I mean, there was a guy. I don't want to embarrass him, so I won't say his name. But you might have even seen the night. It was a late night in Edinburgh, Gilded Balloon.
Yeah.
About 1:30 in the morning, maybe. And the comics were still on, and the guy had been at it all night from the balcony, just shouting.
Oh, God.
And
horrible.
You know, just annoying.
Yeah.
Stuff, and this fella said to him, he said, "Listen, mate, don't do it when I'm on, because if you do, I will come up there and I will knock you out." And so the bloke started shouting at him, and the guy just leapt onto the balcony on his left, scaled it up to the balcony top floor, went up to the guy, and he hit him with his finger ends. Here, just underneath his armpits.
Wow.
He hit him just boom, like that, and knocked him out.
Wow.
And then, you know, he just took all the wind out of him.
Yeah.
And the guy just collapsed. And then he climbed down and did his act.
That's brilliant.
I wouldn't have the balls.
That is incredible.
But he was one of those, he's still going. He's a good act. Uh-huh. He's a good act. But you wouldn't want to piss him off.
No. To date, what has been your comedy highlight?
There's so many to choose from, isn't there? There are so many fabulous performances. I did there's one moment a few years ago in Australia.
Yeah.
I can't remember, Adelaide, I think. I'm not sure where. But I was on a late night show with a lot of different comics doing 10-15 minutes, and I'd done my bit, and the dressing room was very strange. It was just like, you know, it was a dressing room in the basement, but you could hear what was going on stage. It was just down from the stage, but it had a big metal door, big metal door, which was like something out of a fallout shelter. But anyway, these are minor points. But Stuart Lee went on. Oh, I know. And I was standing at the side of the stage watching from the wings. And he was so funny. He was so funny. He was talking about the funeral and the aftermath of the death of Princess Diana.
Right.
And the E.T. doll that was in among... Can you see that routine?
Yes.
God, I mean, I heard it, but I'd never just sat properly and watched it. It was just, it was so funny. And he, yeah, the guy's a genius.
He is. What I love about him is that he can take any subject and turn it on his head. He's fantastic at that.
Through repetition, it just keeps... But it gets funnier every time. It gets funnier. And it got to the stage. I was standing at the side of the stage and I was laughing like someone who was having a kind of an episode.
I do it all the time. Don't worry.
I was like that. And I thought, oh, God, well, that's... No, I can't do that. Can't do that. And I went down a couple of steps and I could still see him like from the side and I was muffling myself. And then it just got... He kept doing the same thing. It was the woman trying to wake the bloke up, or the bloke trying to wake him up. And she just couldn't get him awake. And he was just saying, "Wake up, love, wake up. Oh, wake up, love, wake up. What is it? Wake up, love, wake up." And it was getting worse and worse. And then I realised what happened. Well, I was in pain. It was hurting me. I was laughing so much.
It
really hurting me. And I thought, oh God, this is actually, it's unpleasant. Because, and then he would say something else and it would get worse. I couldn't stop laughing. And there was no laughs left. I was laughing myself inside out. So I went all the way down the stairs into the dressing room, thinking that would save me from the routine. And I could still hear it. I could still hear him. Wake up. Wake
that
up.
Is so wonderful when that happens, because
I was in
pain,
I was
joyous pain.
I thought I was going to bloody die. I was holding onto my stomach and I thought, I can still hear him. So I tried to shut this big metal door to stop the noise of him talking. And the metal door was warped and it wouldn't fit in. So I'm trying to cram it, and I collapsed in the end. And I was on the floor with my hands over me. I had a cushion on my head, trying to block him out from my ears.
There's a
photograph of it somewhere. Honestly, I'm on the floor, and it looks like I'm having
a seizure.
Looks like I'm dying. Well, I am.
That is so great when that happens, though.
Yeah, in that photograph, you see where I'm wrapped with agonizing pain.
Yeah.
I'm having more fun than I've ever had in the life. I'm really enjoying myself.
That is brilliant. Now, what a great story. One of my highlights of watching you was at the Boosie Building, again for your Scratch tour in London.
And the Boosie Building, where's that?
The Boosie Building is it somewhere Kentish Town Way, something like that?
Yeah, I can remember the Boosie Building, but I can't remember.
You did a gig there, it was like a comeback Scratch gig. You did your routine, you were on about an hour, and you finished off with your classic song, Hartlepool.
Right.
And just as you started to play it, on ran Omid Jalili and started playing the bongos.
Oh God!
And we were just, oh my God! And what's been great to see is your friendship with him over the years, because I saw him at the Hammersmith Apollo and you were supporting him, and you came on, and everybody was like, oh, when's Omid Jalili on? You could see them restless. But then as you did more and more and more, they loved you, and I was delighted for you that night. I saw you. And then he came on and you'd warmed them all up and everything. You're big friends with him, aren't you? Do you have many comedy friends that help each other out with any routines or gigs or anything?
No, I haven't got any comedy friends. They don't like me.
Is that true?
Yeah, I don't get on with comedians. They're horrible people. Like they'd have the skin off your back, I tell you. Nice to your face, and then they'd have the skin off your back.
Wow.
For a kite.
Right. Okay.
You know, I can't remember who I was talking to the other day. I hadn't seen in ages. It was making me laugh a lot. Oh God! You see, I forget a lot.
Forget
of things.
The comedians.
That's the other thing. You see, I haven't been on the circuit for a long time, and when I do meet people, again, which is very rare. I mean, especially in our current situation. But when I do a gig with a bill, I mean, I saw Ricky the other just before it all went lockdown. I saw Ricky at Headliners. It was nice to see him. It was nice to see him.
He's a lovely bloke, isn't he? He's got a heart of gold,
and
you wouldn't want to mess with him.
Proper mate, he's proper.
I
actually when in the past when I have met up with people, a lot of the time if I haven't got the glasses on, I can't see.
No, I'm the same, completely blind. See.
Yeah. So often I've actually had conversations with people that I've realised afterwards who it was.
Wow.
Which doesn't go down well.
Wow.
People get very insulted if you appear not to know who they are, even though you can't see them.
I can't stand that. It's like you know, coming across as being better than you, and you're not. You know, you just have a conversation. You just want to have a chat with somebody. You know.
Yeah, but I think people find it very insulting if you don't recognise them because when you know somebody, you don't recognise them. People take it very much to heart when you don't realise who it is. But usually with me, it's because I can't see who it is. And I'm going a bit deaf. I can't hear who it is either.
Yeah.
But I pass it off as, you know, I do that thing with my eyes where I try and look like I'm going along.
When I was at Stoke at college, I was the absolute double. I still am, of Eddie the Eagle Edwards. The lecturers used to stop their lectures and say, "You're not his brother, are you?" And I didn't have a clue who he was. No. And for a leaving present, they got me. He was opening a Radio Rentals in Handley. So I went to meet him and he went, "Bloody hell, you could have made a mint." I said, "I know." But that was extraordinary because I didn't have a clue who he was, you know.
Well, I tell you what, if his movie career kicks back up...
I'm there.
you can be that stunt double.
The other thing as well, I can't ski.
I mean that is realistic.
Nearly through.
Whilst you're talking about Eddie the Eagle,
yeah.
Eddie the Eagle. he was very what was he on? What was he on? He was on one of those.
Was he on Splash or something? Doing
Splash.
Diving.
And it was so funny to see the surprise which people had that he was actually really good at it. Can you remember? And you know, all the somersaults and the tucks and jumps, and he was really, really good, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's brilliant.
And people were surprised. It's that English thing that says, "Oh, if you're not winning the gold medal, you're not very good." The bloke is a serious sportsman.
Yeah. Oh, yes. He was going to compete in the Winter Olympics come hell or high water.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, just because he came 10th or 11th or 20th, even if he came last,
well,
it doesn't, he's still like, you know, you couldn't do it.
No, it's terrifying flying down those hills.
He was a very talented guy. But people, and he's a very funny man as well.
Oh, he was great. When they had the premiere of his film, I was in the crowd, and I yelled out, I went, "Eddie!" And he's walking along, "Eddie!" Walking on the red carpet, and he turned around, and he looked at me, he went, "Because he saw his double."
He thought he was having an out-of-body experience.
And when it was my 21st, I had my 21st in Carlisle, and my brother did the tickets. There's a nightclub in Carlisle called The Front Page. And so, of course, the ticket was, once again, Eddie Edwards makes The Front Page. So everybody knew who and where it was. Anyway, enough about me.
when you're walking in with a ticket for Eddie the
Edwards, is he here?
You don't have to buy a ticket, sir. I think I've done a gig there.
What, you've done a gig in Carlisle?
The front page.
Have you? Wow.
Yeah, sure enough, yeah. I think it's they had an A board outside chalked up, and my name was Bobby Grasso.
What? That's Carlisle for you.
I think the axe had to stand on the bar. Well,
oh mate, if I'd have known, I would have been in that front row.
Oh, it wasn't a great gig.
I must have been down in London. Oh yeah. God.
It was a long time.
Yeah,
ago.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but. That would have been fantastic.
I was born in Carlisle, but I was raised in the British Navy.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I was very serious in Carlisle, but I was straight out gay.
Brilliant. So, let's move on. We are living, of course, in strange
times. You can cut that out, can't you?
Oh, I can... do whatever you want.
Cut all references that sound like I'm talking like that, because it's
we're all living in strange times.
We're all living in a world of poultry.
Yes. How have you found online gigs as opposed to live gigs? Is it easier for you?
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah, it was slightly weird to begin with not to have audience reaction, but yeah. You know, because even when an audience live don't laugh, you can still hear it.
Yeah,
you can hear that lack of laughter. You know what I mean? whereas on a Zoom gig, nobody can hear anything.
And you never know what's going to happen on them.
You get to decide yourself whether it went well or not.
Yeah.
As you say the line, you're the one who gets to decide if that was a good reaction.
Yeah.
And you carry on accordingly. So I actually do like it. The travel from the house to the gig, also in the house, is much better.
Of course. Literally, yeah. You press a button and you're on.
Yeah, yeah. The rider is always better.
Do you not miss live gigs though?
Not really, no.
No.
No, no.
You're doing a month of gigs online called Songs and Stories, which is fantastic, by the way.
Well, thank you very much indeed. Two months, February. We're doing February as well.
You're doing February as well. I'll be at every one of them, mate. That's brilliant. Well,
that would be great. I don't think they're coming out of any. I don't think it's changing in February, is it?
No. I can't see it changing until about April, May, if that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, so online gigs a lot easier to do for you.
Oh no, much harder to do.
Harder.
Yeah. But, oh, sorry, I see what you mean. Yeah. Well, it's depending the logistics of getting there. And being on time, and they're all a lot easier.
Yeah.
But it's easier for me to play music because you only have the pressure of yourself listening to yourself.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So it makes me more likely to play music.
Yeah.
It fills more time, you know.
Yeah.
If you see me online live, you'll notice how a lot of my songs now have this like extra chorus or, you know.
Yeah.
Makes a few chords because I'm just filling time, mate.
It's filling time. That's
great. Because I know my ventriloquist with a mask on, really. Doesn't cut it.
Like me, do you...
I do, very much.
That, yeah. Do you go to many gigs like me as a member of the audience?
Well, obviously not recently,
no.
No, but I at Edinburgh I would watch a lot of shows, yeah. Anything, you know, not music and theatre and.
Are you as bad as me, where I have my holidays in Edinburgh? I go for a week and I see about 60 shows in a week.
Yeah, I do see quite a lot.
Yeah.
I do quite, well, I used to anyway. I stopped going in for that very reason, because we realised we'd never taken the kids on holiday. We realised we'd only ever taken them up to Scotland to see Edinburgh. And what we did was we went and spent a month in a little village in a mountain, on a mountain in Spain, and it cost less than Edinburgh.
Wow.
And it was much nicer.
Yeah. Yes.
So I never went back.
No, it's a shame that you don't perform there, because I always look for you in the Edinburgh Fringe programme, and you're not there.
I think I might go out a season when it all opens up again.
Yeah,
I might go
yeah.
and do out of season.
Yeah.
I'll stop off in Carlisle on the way.
That would be brilliant. That would be so good. Just one more thing I want to say. Is there anything else you want to say? Is there anything you want to plug, or any books you're writing, or any CDs, or any online show?
That's very kind of you. Well, this isn't coming out until later, though, is it? When's this coming out?
It'll be mid-February by the time it goes on, so there'll still be... If you're doing February...
I mean, I don't actually know I've got on in February yet. I've got a couple of big ones in the pipeline. So
right.
A couple of really, you know, not so well known, but really good acts.
Fantastic.
You know, really, really, you know, what people I think are just... personally I think should be much better known than they are.
I think that about you.
Yeah.
Genuinely.
Really?
You do not realize how much you've made me laugh, cry with laughter over the years.
Really?
I'm telling you, I love the originality and the unexpectedness of your act. You just never know what you're going to get next, and I love that.
I only do it for you. My work
That's
is done.
Not true.
they look like somebody. Is that like somebody else's hand?
Yeah.
I tell you, are you familiar with Andrew O'Neill?
Oh, he's brilliant.
Yeah, he's one. And David Eagle.
Yes, I've heard of him. I've never seen him, but I've heard of him.
Very, very. He's never seen you either. He's very. He's very good. There's a few. There's a few that you just think, oh, you're good.
Yeah. And that's the magic, isn't it? When you find somebody that I always love to watch them develop. When you find somebody and you think that was hilarious, that was original, that was, you know, there's something else more about the comic, and if I love it, I really go to town with them. They're absolutely hilarious. So
yeah, there are some good ones out there.
Yeah, long live you as well. Long live your career, my friend, because you, as I say, you've made me laugh so much over the years.
Oh,
like you're doing now.
I wish I'd gone then. That would be fantastic. Perfect.
Thank you so much for your time. I've thoroughly enjoyed talking to you.
Oh, likewise, man. You're very welcome. Thank you very much for talking to me.
And all the best to you with everything that you do.
Hey, same to you. Good luck with the whatever this is.
It's a blog, mate. It's a blog. An interview for a blog. All right, mate. All the best to you. Thanks so much. Cheers now.